This is Ozarks at Large. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith will undergo a reorganization. Yesterday, Chancellor Dr. Teresa Riley announced the restructuring after a process of meetings and surveys. The university will move from five colleges on campus to three, though no degree programs will be lost. The reorganization does not eliminate any current employees or include any demotions. UAFS will also develop a Center for Student Success and Retention. This morning, we talked with Dr. Riley via Zoom about the reorganization.
I arrived as the chancellor in July of 2019, and at that point, we did not have a university budget council or an opportunity for shared governance and decision-making about our resources. Money is not the only resource, but we do have the opportunity, of course, to allocate it out in a variety of ways, so we want input about that process. And so we did start a budget council with the expectation of having great representation to help make decisions, went into a process to create that, but then we had to move all of our classes online due to COVID and realized that lots of predictions were being made that enrollment would be quite low the next school year. In fact, we were reading national surveys that said anywhere from 10 to 20% decline in enrollment across the university should be expected. They had surveyed prospective students, high school seniors. They had surveyed current college students. And what they were hearing were things like, man, this is terrible. I think I'm going to take a gap year. Why would I pay for college if I can't physically be present in classrooms and learning from faculty? And so at that point, reading those kinds of articles and seeing those surveys were incredibly impressionable, our articles. And so we did go through an activity of looking at our own budget through that lens. We were actually loading a budget for this academic year. And we made the decision at that point, the previous CFO and myself, to be pretty conservative in what we were loading for a budget, expecting about a 15% decline in enrollment. But based on that decline and just other factors, we thought we could be down as much as $8 million in revenue for the institution for this school year. You can imagine that on an $80 million a year budget, that was pretty overwhelming to us. And one thing smart leaders do is tell the smart people around them to give them input. I mean, if you are smart, you'll listen to all the great people who are doing work every day, because they're the ones who actually know how we could either generate more revenue, cut our expenses down. They might know where there's any fat in your budget to take advantage of. We also know that oftentimes they're the people who would know what would be more efficient or how we could improve our communication. So we went through that lens of those four different distinctive ways of looking at the way we have our organizational structure and the way we budget. Later, we had, right after we were announcing all of this to our community, we made some very quick decisions about how to balance the budget, but we asked for input. So we sent out surveys that people could submit back to us confidentially. We had hundreds of possible options that were submitted to us. Sometimes some individuals had several ideas about how we could redo this budget, right-size it to what our needs are. And so we used all of those suggestions to create six budget subcommittees. And those subcommittees have been working since May of last year all the way through about January of this year to give us suggestions.
No one likes to hear that there's a potential cut of 10% that could happen, but sometimes you just can't argue that it might happen. What sort of suggestions, what sort of conversations did you have between last May and yesterday?
Goodness. We actually appointed budget subcommittee chair people to look at every single recommendation that came in confidentially, as well to gather groups of people around them who would help them to do this work. So they were actually researching each of the suggestions that came forward, deciding which of those things really had traction. Like, can we do this right away? This is something that could help for next year. Or are they things that maybe need a bit of additional research or that might be more long-term? So for example, closing an academic program takes quite a bit of time. You have people who have just started the program. It would take years mm-hmm. to teach out to conclude an academic program if that was a suggestion. But organizing differently, perhaps using some of the vacant positions that we had on campus at that point and absorbing those in different ways would give us an opportunity to capture that savings in an ongoing way right away. So we actually had several positions that we just filled with interims, people who are very dedicated and knowledgeable, who've done an exceptional job, but who also had real jobs. They were already, say, associate deans or faculty who stepped up to be interim department heads for the year. And in many cases, you know, that was the option and opportunity that we had for reorganization was if we didn't fill all of these, look at the savings that we could generate. And yet those real people have been doing jobs. How do we organize the whole organization differently so that all of the work is covered in a reasonable way by people and give some additional leaders an opportunity to step up and take on leadership roles? So it's been, I think, a really good long period of time for discussion. In January, those subcommittees reported back to the entire university community on what their findings were and what they were recommending. So again, another opportunity for input. So what we've actually adopted doesn't look exactly like what was recommended in January, but very close.
So this reorganization includes, I guess, fewer colleges at the top, but the jobs are safe, there are no demotions, and the degrees are the same, correct?
That's absolutely right. So the number one rule in the entire university organizational structure was that I did not want a single person to lose a job or to be demoted. Can you imagine if that's the main rule of the game, how difficult that I made it? But the truth is we did not want anyone on our campus to lose their income. They're completely reliant on it, and our community is reliant on us employing people. And that's what makes the difference. And we understand that economic impact with furloughs and layoffs. We've never done that as a campus. We've still managed to make these decisions and not take those dramatic actions. And so I'm very proud of that. I'm proud of the group that worked diligently to help create this structure. So we went from five colleges today, starting July 1, we will have three academic colleges. All of the degrees are intact. They might have a bit of a different supervision structure. In fact, everyone will. We have three brand new colleges, not necessarily mergers of old, but three new colleges. And so we do know that going from five academic deans and the structure of that to three means that we are going to save overhead administration costs. And we can actually then make sure that if we do receive additional income, if we have underprojected and we make more money, we can put that right back where it should be in our mission, which is academics.
The projection here is this is a pretty quick savings of $1.1 million and maybe even a surplus?
Not a surplus necessarily, okay. But because we're still, we've got a lot of moving parts still as we're loading our new budget. I would never say that that would be the case, but we would save about $1.1 million in ongoing funding. And then our budget, obviously, we know that we have one-time kinds of savings. So anything that we do that does not fill positions immediately, so if there's a longer period of time when a position is going unfilled, just remaining vacant, then we have some salary savings from that decision-making process. And so many of our departments have had openings that have gone unfilled because we have kind of this hard freeze on position hiring. And yet, if you look at our job website, you'd see we are still hiring because we have many positions that are critical for operation, whether that's in admissions or academic advising or administrative assistants that run a lot of things that happen in our academic programs. Those people are critical to the day-to-day operation here. So we may delay hiring just a little bit, but not to the point where it would be detrimental to our operation or to our ability to serve our students.
The Blue Lion, which is an off-campus sort of entertainment venue, is also a factor in this, correct?
Yes, that's right. We have a committee that looked at every facility on campus and made recommendations about the facilities. It was very difficult. We love our operation at the Blue Lion, love having that brand downtown and being very visible. And so that was a tough kind of decision to make in this process that we would forgo having that location. But it was a pretty expensive venture for the number of times we used it. And we know that now because it's been researched and we have real data informed decisions about it. We only had about 50 events a year at that location. And we had to support it remotely with people who normally work on our main campus. So they were loading equipment and taking it there or moving equipment around or just physically being present as security for an event for some other entity in town. So when we looked at just all facilities, that one didn't get utilized nearly as much as we think it has the opportunity to serve other groups. I contacted the CBID, the leaseholders, and talked with them. And they said, you know, this is serendipitous. Just had a conversation with the city where they must have their meetings elsewhere and they may have an interest in this. What do you want me to ask the question? And I said, well, yeah, obviously it would be phenomenal for something that's costing us money to actually be of great service and need for another group for them to have that opportunity. Of course, that's a really good idea. So we met with the mayor, with the city administrator, we met with all kinds of folks in the city, and they said, oh my gosh, you're just saving us here. We had nowhere to meet. We didn't have any location for the things that we're doing. And we want to be able to safely house an audience for these meetings. We want to be transparent about these meetings. So this will also allow us to have the equipment physically present to stream these meetings, but also allow people to attend safely. And it just worked out really well.
What do you think the next few years will be like? We still don't know where we are, you know, when we'll be completely on the other end of the pandemic. And you said perhaps the projections won't be as bad as you think. But do you have an idea of when you might know? I hate to use this term again, like everyone else.
Like when will I be normal? When will
new be normal. Normal, right? Yeah.
Normal. Yeah. So again, if I had a crystal ball,
right.
I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I'd be off on the beach because I would have won the lottery. However, what my experiential lens tells me about this is that people are so desperate to be back face to face. What I've said to several others who've asked the question is, you know, 10 years ago, I was at a seminar where they talked about what's the future of higher education? Isn't it all online? And isn't that where it's most convenient and affordable? And let's put it online. And boy, has this taught me the opposite. It has taught me that people want that time in the classroom where they're learning from faculty, where they're seeing demonstrations happen live in front of them, where they can interject and ask questions the moment that they see something happening or that they have that question. No, wait, don't move on. I want to ask something now. And it's an environment where they actually are seen, not just seeing for themselves, but where faculty may immediately see people don't seem to understand what I'm saying. Let me try it a different way. Or, okay, you know, I see you look like you're really tired and you've missed the last two classes. What's going on? How can I get you some help? So those things may not be happening online in the same way. And while we have many faculty members who seem to have mastered that, it is an exhausting way to do their work. Everybody's chomping at the bit to come back. And so we will be fully face-to-face this fall. And we have seen that since I made that announcement, just the number of applications for next fall went up 7%. People want that. They don't want to sit in their own homes and study and not make those connections. We all understand that the best opportunity is on college campuses to ensure persistence and success are those relationships that are formed between students and their faculty members. And faculty know that too. They're feeling it deeply that they've missed out on some students that otherwise could have been really great protégés in their disciplines. My guess is because they're so diligent, they will find them anyway. They're really committed, exceptional people. Our faculty and staff bend over backwards for every student. So I believe that we will overcome this in a number of ways, but truly only because of their dedication will they salvage whatever relationship building and educational experiences that occur this year. It's because of them.
University of Arkansas Fort Smith Chancellor Dr. Teresa Riley spoke with us this morning via Zoom. Changes at UAFS will also include the end of the season of entertainment series. Dr. Riley also discussed the creation of the Center for Student Success and Retention, and we'll hear those comments on Weekend Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9 on 91.3 KUAF.